The meeting is just singular.
Okay, I'll spend the next couple of minutes to do the just do the practice of the seven branch worship. Yeah.
Dice da rolling chi do na ji ka so re da ji tang bo ne da gu long ya gu zhuo ge di ge xi mu cha ge re zuo zuo ani ji ka so re rang gi mi xie ba ani sa wo che ani xing gi mi xie ba no sa wo che da gu long tin de ji nia ba er tu da sim gi bo la wa tin de xi gu ge re.
So it's it's extremely important to have a proper intention and motivation for doing engaging in a discussion. Yeah. So primarily, the purpose is to eliminate our own whatever lack of understanding we have of the topic, is to eliminate that, and to also to help others eliminate their misunderstanding and lack of knowledge as well.
Yeah.
So it's important to remember this the intention, the purpose, and the motivation for doing discussion, to keep this in the heart all the time. And so basically engaging in discussion is a method to increase our wisdom, our knowledge, yeah, isn't it? Is there, we engage in discussion to eliminate any misunderstandings or we have. So it's a way to increase wisdom, and it's also a way to increase, to help others increase their understanding as well. So if the other party is, let's say, expressing a something that is a mistaken position or expressing a lack of understanding, then with your application of logic and reasoning, then you show that party that position is mistaken, and then by doing so you help eliminate that person's misunderstanding, and then by you help the person that person to increase his or her wisdom.
What Otuksin, Tene, Chosen, that rolling shave a cobbler, Nitiam, Jundu Chen, Casa Chamber, Chambata, Shishin Tangua, Carsena, Capcola, Mundu Tulin Shave a cobbler, young Kungagil, Nagel, and Jede, Chaguare, Major Shukchimbuchaya, Major and Jede, Watilayan, Jinsu Tangua, and it Aganashi, and Capcola Kondoje, Rolling Cobbler, that didn't Shukchimbuare, Roa, Tinsoyan, call. Langcha mare, torcha res, what in the summer tangche, the matau to she sing riporches, ma, chamber tense, chung tangwa, jesimre.
Also, in the course of discussion, it's important to maintain the sense of mindfulness and vigilance. So, in the course of the discussion, because we are so familiar with mixed with the afflictions, yeah. So the chances of afflictions such as pride arising is very there, and also at times also we may get upset or angry. So these things happen, but the point is just to be mindful, to be vigilant. So when you notice that there are these emotions arising, you just have to check on them, yeah, okay, and then just try to dissociate oneself from those emotions, yeah. So as much as possible, we just try to ensure that our own discussion and participation is not motivated or influenced by the afflictions as much as possible, and then you know. We, as much as possible, we should remember that we are engaging in this practice, you know, to benefit ourselves and to help others.
So today we're going to make a group, the smaller group. So each group have 5 people. So now the leader, the group leader, just sit separate. So the rest of people, you just choose your 5 people who you would like to discuss. Yeah. tukche tanda khunzo di namju da group leader khunzo di da tanda len jakre roba chuwa til khunzo ki len jache ani di sab sab si nye ani len di da so so digi mi du na namsan tila chuwa tang kwaya roba da khunzo len di degir wa tanda chuwa digi len di ani di regi mi du na namsan ya chuwa tang kwaya.
So the groups will present their understanding, their answers. So everybody has to listen when there's someone presenting the answer. And in the course of that presentation, if there's anything that you don't agree with or something that you did not understand, then you should ask them immediately. Okay?
Yeah. Paul. Who? First one. Yeah. Come here.
You can bring the whole thing there.
Okay. Good afternoon, Governor Vijay. Okay. My question. I'm supposed to be explaining, answering the first questions. That's according to the faith, right? And what is faith? And what is why is it faith is important? Okay. Just now, the leaders was upstairs and doing some brainstorming how to answer the questions and how anticipating some questions that from the students will have later on. Okay. So I have five board here. So in order to make you understand or get the remember what is faith, so this is faith. Remember first word, faith. Second word is mental factor. Okay. The third board has three words. It's called clear faith, clear or admiring. Okay, this first word. You can use clear if you don't understand because Avang, you may have been using clear faith. So it's clear or aspiring. And the third one is conviction. So these three kind of faith is admiring, then aspiring, and conviction. Now the fourth board I have is excellent quality and power. Okay, excellent quality and power. The last spot I have is aspirations and non-faith. Okay, all these five boards come together. The words is aspirations and non-faith. Okay, all these come together is actually a definition of what is faith. So I don't use too many long words, but give a block five words so you can remember what are faith. So if faith is a mental factor, okay, that means it's a mental factor, means it's a subject. Okay, it's something that is a subject, it's in the mind, it's nothing to do with outside, but it's something, when I have faith, means it's I have faith, that means my mind have faith. Something is a mind, it's not a table, it's not an object, but it's something, a subject. So it's what is faith? Then faith is a mental factor, and faith, a mental factor of what? It's a mind that has consists, aspect of three things. Three things according to Lambing Tremor is three: aspirations, admiring, and conviction. So these three kind of faith. Okay? Clear faith, aspiring faith, and conviction faith. These three things. Okay? Then followed by aspiration of what? All these three aspects of what? Of excellent quality and power. I mean, I have faith with something. Example, I have faith with the Buddha. Means that I have these three kind of faith, aspiring and then clear convictions of Buddha, of what Buddha qualities. Buddha can liberate us. Buddha had compassion, great love and great compassion to liberate us. That is excellent qualities and power. He had the power to be free us from suffering. So that's power. Okay, his teaching can free us from suffering. That's power. The next one is, and with this these excellent qualities, and so I have inspired myself to move towards intention to develop my practice. So it is aspiration. Okay, that's intention me to move forward. Okay, for my spiritual path. And lastly, is no faith. Means that the more I have faith is to train myself until that I have lost my non-faith. That means not faith, no doubt. That means the antidote is antidote to remove the non-faith. That's why I don't lose him. I don't give up on the Buddha. That is how I train the faith definition. What is faith? Okay? So then when we come to importance of faith, we say, why is it so important? Because it say, according to all the definition, it will tell you that if you don't have that faith, you cannot move forward. Okay? There's no intention to move forward to our spiritual practice. Why is it important? So because it's important, because if we don't have this faith, we cannot move. If our faith is 20%, we only move 20%. If our faith is 100%, we will move 100%. So it's all depend on different individual, how we train our faith to move our faith to be strong. Okay, so that's why it's important, because without faith, our spiritual practice cannot move forward. Without faith, we cannot practice. We will not do sit down and meditate, because we have no faith in meditation. Right? We don't feel the effect of meditation. Without faith of compassion, love, we will not want to sit down and develop good qualities of love and compassion. But that faith is best, is in Lambrin Chemo or in other teachings that we learn, the faith is the root of virtue. That means without that is quality, develop that quality. Without that faith, we cannot develop that quality. So therefore, we need to go back to check ourselves whether we have faith with that quality that we want. Example of bodhicitta or compassion. If we don't have that quality or don't have that faith or quality, then we will want to develop that quality of love and compassion, because we don't have that faith. So faith is a root to see that it's where we find that it's beneficial to have this quality. What happens if I have this? Is it beneficial? What's the benefit of having good love and compassion? Or what is an example? What's the benefit of having spiritual teachers, guru? Then we see all these things as something ascertained, something that we think that yes is the answer. Then we generate that strong faith to develop that spiritual quality, that quality of devotion to the teachers and so forth. Okay, so that's this example. That is my answer for the first question. Okay, thank you. Thank Mike there. The mic is there.
Is it turn on? Is the light? Oh, you have to press and hold it for a while. And do you see a green light? You have to press and hold. No. There's a different mic. No, people go. That's a different mic.
I heard that we have to develop faith in so many topics, right? So if I'm a beginner, I'll be overwhelmed. So of all the topics, of all the whatever realization, what were your advice to a beginner? Which what object or what subject matter I should develop faith in first as a beginner in order to start practicing the path?
Okay. answer. Must ask permission. President is here, Prime Minister must ask permission. Okay, I think if it's for beginners who want to start from the path, I think that's why the refuge, if you are beginner, is called Buddhist. If a Buddhist is convinced that I'm a Buddhist. So the object of faith is Buddha, Dharma and Sangha, three refuge is the basic, is the first object for beginners to see. Okay? But if the person is not so much like a Buddhist, but is a combination of need, that's why the teaching of the Buddha, the Four Noble Truths, probably the teachings is one of the object for you to as object of the Buddha teaching, to have faith in him. The Buddha, the teaching first. Somebody can be the Buddha, teachings become the first for him to get that faith, then become, oh, this person teach Four Noble Truths. Oh, he's right, yeah. Then he must be a good quality of person. That generate a person to have faith with the Buddha. So that faith with the teachings first, then with the Buddha. But there are some who already have some karmic connection with the three jewels and born as a Buddhist. Sometimes being a faith with the Buddha seems to be the first channel to see that having faith of Buddha, that's why they when see there are these three kind of faith, clear faith, aspirations, aspiring faith, admiring faith, and clear faith. Somebody see the Buddha statue can be a kind of faith. Wow, so majestic. It delivered a kind of strong conviction that, wow, he's such a powerful person. Okay, he's such a person that has great love and compassion. So that kind of first time, without starting with the teaching first, but have the aspiration of the particular being, holy being, that's the Buddha. So that can be a different kind of, for different kind of people, then they have different kind of, see whether which faith will stimulate their devotion first. Okay.
I am just trying to be difficult. You said faith is a virtue, right? But just now when we were discussing in our group, right, we were saying, is faith necessarily a good virtue? Because I can believe in Satan and think that he's great. So, but then in the Buddhist context, I mean, we know that to have faith in the Buddha, it's a good thing, right? But then if I don't learn the teaching, if I don't study, then by depending on seeing the Buddha as a magnificent statue, I'm developing a blind faith. I know I'm not right in saying that, but what I'm trying to say is that having faith is just, it's not not enough. It has to come with reading and studying in order to get a very sure faith in that sense. So it could be not very correct by saying that faith is a virtue, because, you know, like I say, faith, you know, I can believe in Satan and think it's great. Like that. Yeah.
Okay, you have three questions. Okay, first, the question is why the faith, whether faith is necessarily a virtue. Second is where your faith, whether not relying on the Buddha teachings, is that not enough to be a faith? Okay, just having aspiration with the Buddha. And third one is the third one actually answer your second question, which is a conviction of faith. Because by learning the Dharma, understanding the Dharma, you actually have a conviction of the Buddha teachings, and that Buddha is a correct, valid person to rely on. Okay, the first one where you asked just now, the first question was, but the first faith definitely we mentioned here is about good quality. Okay, you can have faith with your insurance agent, because he will not run your money away from you. Okay, you have faith, that is the same ordinary faith. And that faith can be just like a faith with Osama or whoever, other religions have faith with Satan, whatever. Okay, at the wrong person, a person who has bring them harm, who know. Okay, but that can be ordinary faith. But here we are referring to faith that have the virtue, because that faith will bring you to a beneficial where you will help others, you have love, compassion, you will benefit a joy and 100% ultimate happiness. So that's what faith we are referring to. Okay? So we divide into that two faith. Ordinary faith, and not, we are talking about some faith that will lead you to ultimate long-lasting happiness. Okay? The second, because the third one, your third mention is already answer your second question. So you have convictions of learning the Buddha teachings. And after you have learned the teaching, Buddha teachings, you generate strong faith and you know that this person is a true person that will bring me to they'll show me the path to liberation. Okay, by relying on the teaching first, then after that, rely on that the holy being. You know what I mean? Answer the question? Does that answer your question? No.
Okay, but the going on. Now we chose another English. Titans another English. Speak into the mic.
Oh, sorry, okay. This is what our group have. pertaining to the question that you asked, because you mentioned that having faith is not an enough virtue, you know. So our group feels that we are referring to sutras. If you refer to your Lamrim Chenmo, page 80, there's this 10 teaching sutra that says that faith is the best vehicle, definitely delivering you into Buddhahood. Therefore, persons of intelligence rely on the guidance of faith. Virtues will not arise in people who have no faith, just as green sprouts do not grow from seeds scorched by fire. So, in essence, the sutra is saying that faith is very important, as it is the basis of all good qualities. So it is important and is presented as a powerful means for Buddhist practitioner to penetrate through to and realize deep spiritual truth for themselves. So when you say that faith is not an enough virtue, perhaps what I would say is that faith should not be blind. In essence, we need to understand the nature and the meaning of faith with discernment, that there must be balance. So in the Mahayana Mahaparinirvana Sutra, it says that if a person does not possess faith and insight, such a person increases his or her ignorance. If a person possesses insight but not faith, such a person will increase his or her distorted views. For example, a person who has no faith will say out of an angry mind that there cannot be any Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha. So when you refer to faith in the Buddhism perspective, it refers to the faith in the Buddha himself as the teacher of supreme spiritual realization and accomplishment. And like our presenter earlier said, that faith in the Buddhism can be expressed in an act of taking refuge. Does that answer your question? Yes? Yeah, so in faith is not in... faith means not in as in theistic type of faith, as in you believe in an ideal God, for example. So in this is the faith with the Buddha, his teachings, and what it can benefit towards the path of enlightenment. I hope this actually helped to clarify the meaning of faith, because you have to have faith in the three jewels, and you have to have faith in the noble truth, and have the belief that the Buddha's teaching is able to lead all of us to spiritual realization and the path of enlightenment. Thank you
for responding to the questions. I think what I want to generate is that what you said is the conviction. So one, that faith is not enough, we call it a blind faith, but if there's no conviction, then what you mentioned about study and Dharma, study and listening, where the wisdom of hearing, wisdom of reflection, wisdom of analytic meditation, if the study is not enough, if you don't have that one, we have no conviction. And we have no conviction, we all lost the faith. And they went out as a Buddhist, my own experience is when we hear about some people who have been Buddhist for many years, then and that's due to the sign of impermanence, the person also lost faith. You know, we heard some people who have been this for 10 years, and after that he also lost faith, because there's no total, truly conviction. Okay, that's shaken the mind, and there's so many doubt, and he lost and say, I know more Buddhist, and so become a Christian, or other religion, I don't know. Okay, so that's why we say there's no conviction, there's no study of Dharma, and never analytical meditation, and so forth. Okay. Okay? One, two, three. Okay, the second one, thank you.
I'm not such a good speaker like Jeffrey. Jeffrey is a trainer. Okay, my second question is, what is meditation? So what I understood is that meditation is the act of repeatedly familiarizing your mind with a virtuous object or meditation that which you have already ascertained. Then there's for the meditation, the object of meditation, there's two types. One is an aspect of the object, and another one is an aspect of the consciousness. Those object meditation, that's aspect of the object, is those apprehended by the mind. For example, let's say we meditate on impermanent, then there will be the aspect of the object. Then for the meditation on the aspect of the consciousness, that, for example, that we meditate on compassion, because we need to cultivate our mind towards compassion. Yeah. So this part, any question before I move to the purpose of meditation? Okay, good. So the purpose of meditation is to bring your mind under control or serviceable. Yeah. So if your mind is serviceable, you can direct your mind as your wish towards the virtuous object. But if your mind is not under control, then the affliction will be controlling your mind. Okay, question 3. Quite straightforward, lah. Huh?
Questions? Anybody? Next.
Okay, the question is, what is the most important thing to do in between the meditation session? I'm very tempted to say, go and lim kopi. Because I will fall asleep during meditation. But anyway, okay. I say it's the most important thing, right? So I suppose, I think it's mindfulness and vigilance of the object of meditation. That's the most important thing. Because even if you say restraining sensory faculties, observing vows, read the relevant text related to the object of meditation, practice accumulation of merit and purification. The idea is you have to, in between session, post-meditation, you're supposed to keep the mind with regards to the object of meditation. Yeah? I mean, if you're meditating on death and suddenly you, after post-meditation, you're thinking of president election, then I don't know if during meditation, I don't know why you're going to meditate here.
So, when the president is going to die, for example.
So is everyone. So, yeah.
Oh no.
So
another election.
Haven't started already cursing him. So poor guy. Okay. One and the two and the three.
Mm-hmm. Is there any difference between mindfulness and vigilance?
I think mindfulness is not to forget the object. Yeah, vigilance is actually, you know, you notice your mind, you have to observe your mind whether it's moving away from the object and you bring it back to the object. Tio bo ha? That is layman's term lah. You chim chim man, go to other seniors. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. If you have any questions.
Question 4, yeah.
What is the difference between analytical meditation and stabilizing meditation? So I'm going to give the definition with precise words. So if you're not sure about the word, then you can ask me. Yeah. So I'm not going to, yeah. So it'd be very succinct and precise, okay? Analytical meditation is that which one uses wisdom of discernment to analyze with repeated familiarization on one's object of meditation that has been ascertained. Would you want me to repeat again? That's why I asked this question, I know. Analytical meditation is that which one uses the wisdom of discernment. Okay, what is discernment? You want to know? And it's a, discernment is an act of exhibiting keen insight and judgment. That's what discernment is all about, okay? Keen insight and judgment, okay? A wisdom of discernment to analyze with repeated familiarity or repeated familiarization on the object of meditation that you have ascertained. So you understand what the word ascertainment in this context is not so straightforward as you, but you understand in the dictionary. Okay, there is a spiritual progress, yeah, a certain level of understanding or realization, understanding. Okay, so next one, stabilizing meditation is that which one does not engage in analysis, but focus single-pointedly with repeated familiarization on one's object of meditation that has been ascertained. Okay, so the difference is one, both of them share the same thing of familiarization on the object of meditation that you have ascertained. But the difference comes in the first one, analytical meditation, you engage wisdom of discernment to analyze what you have ascertained repeatedly until you gain familiarity. Stabilizing meditation, you do not engage in analysis, but you focus single-pointedly on what you have ascertained until you gain familiarity. Okay? 可以吗? So any questions on this?
I got a question, but anyway, I'm not supposed to ask you the question. Hey?
Just got one query as to the sequence of doing the meditations. Analysis, meditation come before stabilization, or you can go back and forth, or what is the sequence?
Okay, that is maybe the part two of the question. Huh? It is correct for one to engage both. Okay, so with this question, I can answer maybe. Yeah. So, is it correct for one to engage both? The answer is yes. All right, if you need to attain calm abiding or meditative serenity, then you necessarily need to engage in stabilizing meditation. Okay, but if you need to develop strong faith in a guru and so forth, right, things that which requires analysis, you need to engage in analytical meditation. Okay, so as far as you know, whether it goes, which one comes first, it depends on that particular object of meditation that you are focusing on at that point in time. All right? So if you're starting from the very beginning, you've achieved the wisdom arisen from reflection, you gain ascertainment, then you go and maybe you meditate on faith in the guru, which is the first topic, for example, in the Lamrim. Yeah? So that involves analytical meditation instead of stabilizing meditation. Whereas if you have gone deeper into the path and you are on a stage where you're about to attain calm abiding, so you need to you cannot do analytical meditation just prior to attaining calm abiding. But do stabilizing meditation, because it was mentioned in class that if you do analytical meditation just prior to attaining calm abiding, that will hinder your attainment of calm abiding. Can I repeat which part?
If I meditate on, if I choose Buddha as an object of meditation to develop calm abiding, if I have not developed calm abiding with respect to Buddha, have I ascertained Buddha, the object of meditation? I want to achieve calm abiding. So let's say I choose to meditate on an image of Buddha. So before I develop calm abiding, the realization, have I ascertained my object of meditation?
So you are talking about ascertainment itself. So ascertainment comes at a point of the wisdom arisen from reflection. Okay, that's the definition for attaining ascertainment. All right, so like was explained when one of the students asked Kishila, Ken Rinpoche, about the difference between analysis and analytical meditation. Okay, so one comes, all right, analytical meditation supersedes reflection. Okay, reflection must precede analytical meditation or any meditation. Okay, so therefore, by definition, all right, you will necessarily need to gain ascertainment, which is the wisdom arisen from reflection, before you embark or engage in any meditation, be it analytical or stabilizing, by definition. You have some question just now?
I might be jumping the gun a little bit. I want to understand by achieving or practicing stabilizing meditation after hearing reflection and analytical meditation, and then you stabilizing meditation to achieve calm abiding. And I don't quite understand what calm abiding means. I don't quite understand what special insight means. I need to relate to that to associate the subject. I'm just on top of my mind, just thinking on top of my mind without much learning or something. Say, for instance, please teach me. For instance, when I stabilize, when I have achieved stabilization of various topics already, that means, meaning that I've finished studying the subject and stabilizing, achieved stabilization meditation for those subjects, only then I'll be in a position to be in a calm abiding meditation or insight meditation, because this would be the area pertaining for somebody to see emptiness directly, or I don't know. I just because the word calm abiding always coming up and now coming up here, and I need to have some kind of understanding. Thank you.
Basically, you want to know what calm abiding is and what special insight is. There's 1.5 years. We did 1.5 years of special insight and we still have not finished it yet. But as far as your question on about stabilizing the various, for example, Lamrim topics before you enter meditation to achieve calm abiding, I'm not very sure whether you need stabilizing meditation to achieve those Lamrim topics, as was explained in class, that you employ analytical meditation for topics such as faith, developing faith in the Guru, refuge, faith in the Four Noble Truths, achieving understanding on the three jewels, faith in the three jewels, and the existence of the three jewels, for example. Yeah, these kind of Lamrim topics, you employ analytical meditation such that at the end of that meditation, you gain a very strong, powerful, and stable realization at the end of the analytical meditation. Right? You achieve the wisdom arisen from meditation. All right? That is very powerful, strong, and stable, such that you, whatever its direct, its opposite will not arrive anymore, will not be able to manifest anymore. You're able to use the mind in a serviceable way to, in a way, control and manage the afflictions such that it will not manifest. You have not totally got rid of them from the root, but you control them from manifesting. All right. So in that way, if you say that it's stable, yes. But is it using stabilizing meditation to achieve that? I don't think so. So they see the difference between it being stable and employing stabilizing meditation. So maybe three already now. More controversy.
I just want to clarify with you. Just now, in your answer to the question, like, in order for one to choose whether one should do a stabilizing meditation or analytical meditation, it depends on the object of meditation. Did I hear that correctly?
The topic that you want to achieve the realization on.
So you are talking. The topic means
faith. For example, faith. Topic on faith on the guru. Mm-hmm. All right. You faith on the guru, refuge, Four Noble Truths, Three Jewels, Karma, things like these. All right, you employ, and then after gaining ascertainment, which is the wisdom arisen from reflection, you enter into analytical meditation to repeatedly familiarize yourself with those topics that I just mentioned, that has been cleared of all doubts without any more qualms. All right, you have the faith of conviction down there, but you have not realized that topic yet.
So you're saying that, like, we know the, if one were to look at the Lamrim outline before...
By that time, you don't look at the
Lamrim. No, because did you use the expression object of meditation?
Say again?
I heard something like, in order for one to determine which type of meditation one should employ, it depends on, seems to me, I heard that...
Chosen object of meditation.
Okay,
yeah.
So... if that is the case, cultivate karma abiding, but I look at the Buddha,
Buddha now, I guess.
No, I look at the Buddha statue, right? So the Buddha statue...
Yeah, my question was not answered, so...
Sorry?
Yeah, then you can continue.
No, because... so it's the Buddha statue, right? So, what do you call that kind of meditation?
Huh?
The object of meditation is the Buddha, right? It's the Buddha statue. So, I can use a Buddha statue to cultivate my realization of my faith in a three jewel. I can also use a Buddha statue in order to start my meditation on karma abiding. So, for me, I thought the expression of, like, whether one should employ the object of meditation is the factor that determine whether one should employ stabilizing meditation or analytical meditation. I thought that is not very clear.
Yeah,
because one, like, given the example, if you say that it depends on object of meditation, then in this case, meditating on Buddha statue, I can use it for both ways. It depends on which level, what kind of realization, what kind of realization I would like to develop in my mind. I would think that would be the case.
Object of meditation, number one, need not necessarily be some external object. It can be your subjective aspect. Like what we explained just now by Jeffrey, all right? The The subjective aspect can be the mind of faith. In this case, you mentioned the example of faith in the three jewels. Okay? So you bring up the object of meditation, which is faith in the three jewels. You want to achieve the wisdom reason from meditation on faith in the three jewels. All right? You will necessarily have ascertained during the reflection process, the reflection phase, yeah? All right, without any qualm, without any doubt, okay, that the three jewels exist, okay, and those analysis, okay, will be on topics like, you know, how you ascertain them, right? What are the benefits of, you know, having faith in the three jewels, and so on, okay. So those topics that you analyze are precisely the topics that you meditate on. The topics that you reflected on are precisely what those that you meditate on. But when you are doing meditation, you are not newly reflecting or analyzing the topic. You have already ascertained them and come to a firm conclusion without any hint of a doubt. You have no more qualms about it. So now you are repeatedly familiarizing on what you have analyzed in the reflection phase. So you're reflecting on that object of meditation, which is what? Faith in the three jewels. You've already gained that ascertainment. No more qualm, no more doubts. But you're still analyzing if you're doing analytical meditation. And I think you use analytical meditation on subjects like faith in the three jewels rather than stabilizing meditation, which was explained in class by Ken Wei Che, right? Faith in the three jewels, karma, faith in guru, four noble truths. These topics you use analytical meditation to achieve the wisdom arisen from that. Whereas if you are talking about attaining calm abiding for the first time, okay, you use stabilizing meditation and you do not analyze, right? Because that becomes an obstacle, a hindrance to achieving calm abiding, equanimity.
Is it possible to ascertain calm abiding without having experienced it? Without having achieved it first? Just thinking about it.
So, as far as the topic of calm abiding is concerned, right? My understanding is this, right? Before you achieve the wisdom arisen from meditation, you have to do analysis, all right, on the certain topics, the antidotes to laxity and excitement, for example, right? If you think that you get excited, you need to employ the antidotes to excitement. For example, reflecting, analyzing on death and impermanence, okay, to be an antidote to excitement. When you are facing laxity, you need to uplift your mind by thinking on the qualities of the three jewels, you know, precious human rebirth, right? To uplift your mind. So these kind of antidote to attainment of calm abiding, which is later on, necessary involves analysis to help you overcome these major obstacles to attaining calm abiding. But before you achieve calm abiding at a stage, I'm not sure, maybe Ken Rinpoche can explain a little bit, maybe you achieved the stage of equanimity, for example, yeah? You have already abandoned both laxity and excitement, even subtle laxity and subtle excitement. I'm not very sure about that particular phase, yeah? Maybe by that time, you do not analyze anymore, but single-pointedly focus on what you have ascertained, all right? And familiarize yourself until you gain that realization.
But until we experience calm abiding, is it possible to ascertain it? What do we mean by ascertainment of calm abiding? I'm just wondering. I have one mental block. Shine, you ever? Shine, Mato, what do you think? Mato, what do you think? You ever?
Wow, so many questions. My leg very tired.
I have to ask this. I'm getting very confused.
Right from
good or bad, I don't know.
Huh?
I don't
know. Right from the beginning, right, you said something about the object and the object, and I'm wondering what is the object. Okay, never mind. Never mind. No, my question is, before you said you were talking about stabilizing meditation and to focus on an object. Just now what Mui Ching was saying that, correct me if I'm wrong, stabilizing meditation, you said I could focus on an object. So let's say I take Buddha. If I don't know very much about Buddha, it is just a couple statue to me. So I meditate on that couple statue without knowing very much about it, which I think cannot be done, because if you focus on an object without first analyzing about its, you know, whatever qualities that Buddha has, how could you possibly meditate on it?
Agreed.
Don't you need to...
Yeah, agreed.
No, there's a difference between Buddha and Buddha statue.
Okay. No, you see, but the thing is, if I don't know anything, if I don't know very much about Buddha, I cannot meditate on
that
it.
That is why you need to do analytical meditation.
Correct. So, the question comes in. Which is to say, I have to do analytical meditation first before I can do stabilizing meditation. But it is not the case. Because in the book, right, it says, right...
Who said it was the case?
I want to try. No, that's why I'm confused. Because, you see, in the book, the stabilizing meditation, right, it says...
Okay,
you need to sustain this through placing the mind single-pointedly without analysis. So,
yes.
And karma binding says that it enables one person to place the mind on a single object so as to control and calm the mind on a single object before moving on to meditation, analytical meditation. So, I need to do analytical meditation first before I even go into stabilizing meditation. Correct or no? No, right? Not necessarily so, right?
Ni kong si mi ya.
The essence of the question is there a definite order for these two meditations?
Because I understand there is no definite order.
Okay la.
But it is contradicting because...
Why?
Because how can I focus on Buddha stabilizing meditation? How can I focus on that particular object without knowing much about it and go into meditation?
Why not?
I don't know about it. I don't know.
You know what a statue is, yeah?
Yeah, but... Okay, let's say we don't take statue, okay? We don't take Buddha. We take...
As long as I give you one example that works and is works for you, you can choose how many objects you want, but...
But it doesn't work,
For example, if you talk about the definite order of the outline, the Lamrim Chemo or Lamrim outline, the definite order, Lama Tsongkhapa said in the scripture or in the Lamrim text very clearly that you don't jump about in your various meditation topics. You must necessarily achieve one before you go to the next. So if you look at the outline, the first one, what is it? Huh? For example, guru devotion, for example, may not necessarily be the first one. The first one may be gaining faith of conviction on the four greatnesses of the Lamrim, right? Lama Atisha, for example. This involves analysis, analytical meditation. If you go according to this... Yeah.
Basically, her question is whether there is an order, is there a definite order in between analytical and stabilizing? Must one come before the other? Is analytical meditation necessarily precede stabilizing meditation or not? Does analytical meditation necessarily precede stabilizing meditation? That's the essence one, you know? That's what she's driving at, yeah.
Is it? No.
No, that's the qualm.
Yeah, but somewhere, yeah, that is the qualm. But somewhere in the text or somewhere I read that it stabilizing. Okay, you can do analytical meditation before.
Ah.
Hey, wait.
Hey, wait.
Yeah. So correct lah. So what? I do stabilizing meditation, I must do my analytical meditation first, right?
Is it necessarily like that?
Yeah, is it necessary? But it may not be.
Yeah, as I said, if you look at the outline, what is the conclusion? If you look at the outline, the first topic that you need to realize. Okay, do you need analytical or stabilizing meditation, or you need both?
Oh, it follows that non-Buddhists also meditate on that first outline.
Now, we are talking about the gradual stages to enlightenment. Lam Rim Chemo, yeah? We are in this topic, so let's focus.
There are many people who also practice the minor path but do not know the Lam Rim per se.
Could you be so kind to give an example? Because you have already outlined what are the topics need to be done for analytical meditation. It's clearly outlined there. However, you say stabilization meditation, there are topics that doesn't need analytical meditation to go into directly into the stabilizing.
Like,
yeah.
For example?
Yeah,
like.
I'm asking you. Giving me
calm abiding.
I already told you,
calm abiding.
Yeah, exactly. What I'm asking.
You tell him. Huh? It's calm abiding, you tell him.
Well, the fact
I agree.
No. The thing is, I don't even understand what calm abiding means when you just described focusing single-pointedly. And what is the difference between focusing single-pointedly? Of course, I got to be careful using the word meditation, because then meditation and single-pointedly would have two different meanings. One is just single-pointedly, maybe for the first time, and the word of meditation will be repeatedly. So you were saying that the calm abiding would would that mean that achieving first time or anything that is we are familiarizing, repeatedly stabilizing, would be, doesn't qualify as calm abiding. I still don't understand the difference.
Yeah, doesn't qualify as calm abiding, no.
So what is calm abiding as so difference is to single-pointed meditation differentiating from stabilizing meditation?
So your question is, what's the difference between stabilizing meditation and calm abiding? Is that your question?
Yes.
So I think I'm just thinking here. So you, when you achieve the ascertainment that is a wisdom arisen from reflection, okay? For example, then you go into stabilizing meditation. Okay, and you want to repeatedly familiarize on the object that you have ascertained. Okay, so that is single point, that is stabilizing meditation. All right, so you agree with that point?
I agree to that point if that is, you were talking about analytical then stabilization. You were
talking
about reflecting first, and then we're talking about. I just want to be clear. Sorry, I'm quite thick. Analytical meditation. You're talking about analytical meditation, then stabilization, then calm abiding.
Ah.
What my understanding is, you don't necessarily going through analytical. You can go. There are three ways or two ways of going into calm abiding. One is analytical, and then analytical meditation, and then stabilization meditation, and then calm abiding. Another way is stabilization meditation, and then calm abiding. So you are illustrating just now is analytical, stabilization, and then calm abiding. Yeah. What is the difference between the stabilization and the calm abiding? Sorry.
So you agree that there are stages, right?
Yeah.
From analytical meditation, for example, I just now brought up a point about laxity and excitement, using the various antidotes to laxity and excitement, right?
That's pertaining.
So you understand, you agree also laxity, excitement are the major obstacles to achieving calm abiding? The main obstacle for attaining calm abiding?
Yes.
Well, the yes. laxity and...
Yes.
But it's not...
No, do you agree? Yes or no?
I say yes, yes, but then yes, it applies to all meditations, not just calm abiding, isn't it? Laxity and excitement applies to both analytical and stabilization meditation if you want to achieve a good meditation. Or is that you are talking? You are saying that laxity and excitement only apply to calm abiding. Calm abiding. Can I say calm abiding meditation? Or is that the word?
Achieving calm abiding.
Calm abiding.
Yeah. Attaining calm abiding.
Because achieving calm abiding meaning that is. I'm very confused.
Maybe we can request Ken Rinpoche to make a very eloquent answer to, you know, the stages of analytical meditation, stabilizing meditation, the difference between stabilizing meditation and calm abiding. Everybody will be peaceful.
I'm praising myself.
So one of the things to sort out is if there is a difference between stabilizing meditation and calm abiding. Yes, there is a difference. There is a huge difference. Yeah. So the topic of calm abiding comes towards the end of the Lamrim. Usually any Lamrim text, yeah. The treatment of calm abiding is done right behind, yeah. And it is treated as a separate, well, it's treated in quite a lot of detail, yeah. And the two main obstacles for developing calm abiding are excitement and laxity in both its cause and subtle forms. In order to achieve calm abiding or meditative serenity, as it's translated in the Lamrim Chenpo, yeah. Or calm abiding, as we usually hear. You have to go through the nine mental abidings. Yeah, what we call the nine mental states, yeah, before you achieve calm abiding. So what is calm abiding? Calm abiding refers to the ability, you know, to focus your mind on any chosen object, you know. Focus on it, you know,
And that focus is not influenced by any forms of excitement or laxity, whether coarse or subtle, in, no? And able to stay on the object for as long as you want. So there's one measure of it in the text that says that the measure of, in terms of time, is you're able to do that for at least 4 hours, for example. Oh, so that's what karma abiding is, yeah. So when you achieve calm abiding, you gain what we call the physical and mental pliancy, where your body and mind becomes serviceable, no? Serviceable, very pliant, yeah. Supple, pliant. And they say that you also achieve these special blissful feelings. So that's what we call the bliss of physical pliancy, and there's the bliss of mental pliancy as well.
Yeah.
So for us now, when we engage in virtue, we get tired, and our bodies get tired and exhausted and so forth. You don't really feel like in doing it, yeah. But when you achieve calm abiding, then, you know, you don't feel the kind of tiredness and the kind of restriction physically, you know. Very serviceable for virtue, basically. So in the case of stabilizing meditation, or some people translate as placement meditation, yeah. Or placement or stabilizing meditation. So of course you have an object of meditation, isn't it? So you must have the, you must be familiar with the object already. Yeah, you have ascertained it. You understand it well. And what placement or stabilizing meditation is that you just place your mind on it without being distracted by anything else. Yeah.
So there is a
difference, in fact, a big difference between stabilizing meditation and calm abiding. Then as for the question is, you know, it's a question about the obstacles of meditation. You know. Is laxity and excitement necessarily only an obstacle for developing calm abiding, or is it an obstacle for any form of meditation? So it's something to think.
Yeah.
So when you're engaging in analytical meditation, so if excitement creeps in, does it hurt? Does it damage the, or does it interfere in your analytical meditation? So let's say you're engaging in analytical meditation, yeah? If excitement creeps in, is it good or bad? Is it beneficial or is it harmful when you have excitement?
It's helpful or not? It's harmful? Same the angle on Java Chidogala? Some long mambo, tongue go matter. The Chegum Chidogala, some long mambo.
So you say it's harmful, right? But when you engage in analysis, the point is to the very fact of, when the very fact, analysis brings about distraction, yeah.
your mind has to move here and there and think about all sorts of stuff, isn't it? So when you engage in analytical meditation, hello, this is a question. Don't think that everything is necessarily right or necessarily wrong. Yeah, it's like, okay, when you're engaging in analytical meditation, don't you have to think about stuff from all sorts of angles? Ooh. So your mind is pretty excited, no? Is your mind excited? What's the point of bringing the mind back? So when you engage in analytical meditation, do you have to think about stuff from all sorts of different angles? You have to think about a lot of stuff, isn't it? Agree or not? Right. That's what analysis is, yeah? So when you think about stuff, isn't your mind distracted? So if you need to bring it back in the first place, then why do you analyze? Don't need to analyze. I said, do you need to bring it back already? Right? So placement meditation is enough, you see? Going by that logic. I think we'll give you a mic standby next time, just for you. So when we discuss these things, these are to eliminate qualms, no? To think about stuff. It's not saying that, oh, when you hear a question, you should not necessarily, you should not think that, oh, it is necessarily, sometimes it is, the question seem to imply certain things, yeah. Don't think that is necessarily so, yeah. Okay? So, the question is excitement and laxity harmful for analytical meditation? Harmful or not? So, because you said yes, yeah? It's not about yes or no, but you said yes. Because since you said yes, then the second question is that, but when you analyze, your mind is thinking about stuff. Your mind is not fixed on one thing. Your mind is going everywhere, isn't it? So, in that sense, your mind is distracted, isn't it? Huh? So, being distracted about the right stuff is not harmful, lah. So there's positive excitement, So. When there is distraction, when the mind moves during analysis, it's helpful for the mind, isn't it? No. When you're analyzing means the mind is moving, right? So the mind moving during analysis is helpful for your mind, isn't it? It's helpful for meditation, yeah? Yeah. Yeah, necessary. Yeah.
Oh, that is some of the time that touch you, Rota Tundani, Tatunda, Chimanda Gobani, Gum Jack Ressung, the Chegum Jack Donamondo, and some of the time she read, the artist, and the summer tongue, the name, Chosen Tanayan.
So
So it is said that laxity and excitement are harmful for meditation, yeah. So is it harmful for analytical meditation? So that's one question. The other thing is that must analytical meditation necessarily precede stabilizing meditation? Another thing to think about, yeah. Must analytical meditation necessarily precede stabilizing meditation?
Sorry, my question here is for stabilization meditation. Are we strictly talking about stabilization of, you know, things we have analyzed or we have knowledge on, or can we actually refer to the stabilization of our mind? For example, if let's say we have a very distracted mind and we try to stabilize our mind before we engage in any analysis. So, if I'm taking from this point of view, I think that it can be any form of sequence. It can be stabilization first, then analytical. If I'm understanding the stabilization meditation from the point that I'm trying to stabilize my mind, can I understand as that? Or am I totally out?
In simple English, he's saying that, let's say, before I meditate on a lamrim analysis, I stable my mind first. So in that sense, stabilizing meditation can occur before analytical meditation, right? Basically, that's the point, yeah. So what she's trying to say is, follows that analytical meditation need not necessarily precede stabilizing meditation. That's the point.
Yes, correct.
Yeah. Thank you. So, when you engage in stabilizing meditation, you need an object, isn't it? Do you need an object? Do you agree? In order to engage in stabilizing meditation, in fact, any kind of meditation, no, stabilizing, let's say, you need an object, yeah? So, following from what Rachel said, so if I ask you, in order to do a stabilizing meditation, you need to have an object for it, isn't it? You need to know the object well, yeah? So, in order to be clear about the object, in order to be clear about the object, you must have thought about the object, yeah? So if that's the case, then before you do stabilizing meditation, you already thought about stuff. That's analysis, yeah.
So
So it's not so straightforward to get an answer. We are not even saying, or we are also not saying that the answer is necessarily so, no, or analytical meditation must necessarily precede, you know. It's not the answer. The answer is not so important at times, you know. It's the process, you know. It's, you know, because things you don't understand something immediately. We have to think about things. It takes time. So the more important thing is the process. You know, you apply your brain, you know, think about things using reason, you see. Yeah, so now at this point of time, don't worry about right and wrong. It's not the point. It's the process, you know, to stimulate your thinking, so you develop your critical analysis, yeah, your power, your wisdom.
Yeah. There are
always things that will be left unsettled, unfinished, without a conclusion. It is normal, you have to expect it, you know. Don't ever think that, every single discussion, every single debate, you know, you must have a conclusion, or even or after many years. It's not the case, you know. There are certain things, you know, that it's just left up there, you know. You're aware of the different positions, you know. But, you know, perhaps you're not able to come to a definite conclusion. Perhaps you can side with one, but, you know, to say that it is like that is not always the case. Because, as in the case of the great masters, the scholars, you know, there are many things they are left undecided, but even they cannot decide on a lot of things, I mean. And of course for us, I mean, there's no need to worry, lah. So, you know, it's okay, you know. Yeah, this one thing about Singaporeans, what's the answer, what's the answer? Every time, what's the answer? What's wrong with no answer, you
know?
So that's why we need more questions, more doubts. With more doubts, we have more questions, and with that, more improvement. Is this the only way to really to improve, you know, to understand? Yeah. So if you don't have any questions, you don't have any doubts, you sit there and you think that it's okay. There's really no great benefit. No? So it doesn't mean that, you know, you have no questions, you don't ask, you don't think about it, you sit there. It doesn't mean that you will become more sharp or more intelligent. Or no, that's not necessarily the case. Yeah. The more you ask, the more you think, the more doubts, the greater will be your wisdom.
Karen Pushe, I'd like to clarify, because during our discussion, we come to this conclusion that during one session of stabilizing meditation, there are always both form of meditation at work, because in order to gain stabilizing meditation, there are always laxity, excitement come in. In order to develop the antidotes to laxity and excitement, one therefore has to engage in analytical meditation. So therefore, during the one session of stabilizing meditation, actually analytical meditation are also being practiced. Similarly, during the when one meditates on the number of topics like guru devotion, actually we also seems to think, we come to this query about whether stabilization meditation is also has to take place. For example, after one do analytical meditation and arise a certain kind of heartfelt feeling like guru is Buddha, you know. At the moment, one is asked to hold that feeling as long as possible. So during this, how to call it?
The essence of the question is
whether
you're trying to make a statement is in any one meditation session. In that one meditation session, you can do both meditations.
Yes.
Analytical and placement. Full stop. Yeah, that's the question. Yeah, I think that's the question.
Just now, actually, somebody asked.
Yeah, that's the question.
Ask Benny whether during loving meditation, when certain feeling arise and you hold on to that feeling, is that a stabilizing meditation? That one is my question.
Or you, when, let's say you suddenly meditate, you have strong feelings of compassion. Then do you stop and then place your mind on that feeling? And when you do that, is that placement meditation, right? So you do both.
죽음게 죽음 되게 죄공의 편도가래 죄공 죽음을 받 도치기어라 이나야 받고 죽음 죄배 뒤때나 죄공 죽이어 말 죄공 죄배 뒤때나 죽음 죽이어 말.
So you can do both in one session, but these two cannot be done at any one time. You alternate basically. So you do analytical meditation, and then you develop this this ascertainment, strong feeling, whatever it is. Then you do placement meditation or stabilizing meditation on that, yeah. So you stabilize, you meditate, you know, you place your mind on what you have ascertained. So at that time you don't do analytical meditation, but when at the time of doing analytical meditation you do not do placement meditation, yeah. Or you all can alternate them in one session, yeah. But they don't happen together at the same time, isn't it? Yeah. So they help one another, isn't it? These two, by alternating between analytical meditation and stabilizing meditation, they assist one another. So you analyze and you get a feeling. So you place your mind on it. When the feeling is it starts to go away, then you engage in analysis to bring it back again. Boleh?
Okay. Our time is over time today.
Okay, we'll do a short video.